I'm here with my friend, NFL linebacker and current venture capitalist, Hunter Hillmeyer. Welcome, Hunter.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Yeah, of course. I've in more recent interviews and kind of conversations, I've been thinking a lot about firsts and like whether it's your first hit, first time on a field, first memory in kind of your profession. And so I was thinking about you. Do you remember the first time you put the pads on and stepped out on the, on the gridiron?
I started playing football when I was in the fourth grade. And in my very first game at that age, which I don't even know if fourth graders play tackle football anymore,
No, it's flag.
they
It's
just
flag.
gave the ball to the biggest kid, like the one who was either obese or who had like hit his growth spurt.
Yeah.
And I was the middle linebacker and I tried to tackle the guy and he crunched down on my wrist and I stood up and my hand was like folded over my forearm, fully snapped the whole wrist in my
Wow.
first football game ever. So my first in football was like, what kind of crazy people play this game? A little
Right.
bit. So I then didn't play again until seventh grade, and so despite a bumpy start, I ended up loving the game and obviously playing it for a long time.
That's awesome. Do you remember that first time where you stepped on a NFL field?
I'll actually say, and I think that a lot of SEC players may echo this same sentiment.
Seriously, yeah.
The jump from high school to college was a bigger jump for me than college to pros. So I played my last football game my senior year of high school in whatever it was, November of that year. And then the next time I stepped on a competitive football field was on the opening kickoff 8 months later against Alabama. And I went
Yeah.
to Vanderbilt. We're obviously enormous underdogs, and I remember standing out there for the opening kickoff and seeing those red Bama jerseys across the field and thinking, "Holy shit, what have I gotten myself into?" So
Right.
that to me, I mean, everybody that starts in the SEC for the most part is going to have a chance to play in the league. So you're not seeing the speed and like precision of the NFL game, but you are seeing the same, at least athlete types on the field.
Yeah, and the hype and the energy and the, stadium filled with fans and all that. But
Sure.
whenever I do these, interviews, it's always more fun when you do it with somebody you already have a relationship with, because you can do a little research and find out and learn some, new things. And I saw this quote on maybe it was your LinkedIn page, but somebody had wrote, "You have the unique ability to collaborate with people from all walks of life and profession to achieve mutually beneficial outcome." So, like, where do you think that collaboration, that, teamwork, where's that come from?
Yeah, gosh, I'll have to figure out who wrote that. I mean, even now in my life in Nashville, like I was a Nashville native, but my social circles in Nashville, there's like my former athlete friends, and there's the kids I went to high school with, and there's the parents of our kids' high like school, and we have always just kind of existed in a lot of different worlds. I think certain people feel most comfortable just kind of only hanging out with their tribe. And we have intentionally tried to, for ourselves and for our family, just try to spend a lot of time with a lot of different people. Like I find some of my most stimulating conversations to be when I'm engaging with people who don't think like me and don't have my background. And I think seeking that out, even if it can be challenging to engage with people that see the world very differently than you or have lived different experiences than you're going to learn a lot more. And I've always tried to embrace that. And I think that shows up in a professional setting too, where you get comfortable with the fact that, just because somebody thinks differently than you, it doesn't mean that you're right and they're wrong. And leaning into maybe where those differences in opinion have originated can get you to better outcomes. And that's both like professional and personal to me.
Right. Well, it explains why when you're on the Bears, you're also on the board of the NFLPA, and seems like you always have like these different, like you never just one thing going on.
Yeah, I mean the PA for me, I really liked that. And especially in my post-playing career, I know you've got a lot of athletes that listen to this podcast. Especially for those that are active players, I thought the PA network was fascinating because you get to meet somebody from every locker room. And, you know, it tends to be the more kind of business oriented or even just the biggest dork in each locker room that gets elected by their teammates.
Yeah.
But you get to meet all the other dorks in the NFL. And that network in my post playing career has been instrumental. Just in, you know, job opportunities and people that have gotten involved in startup things that I'm doing. And so for me, like at first it was just one of the older vets on the team was like, "Hey, you need to be our player rep. You're a smart guy." I was like, "Yes, sir."
Thank you.
but then it evolved into something where I really embraced that and enjoyed. I think I was a rep for 5 years and got pretty involved. Even like in the 2009 lockout, I was in the National Labor Relations Board going through the 10-hour negotiation days. And that was a fantastic life experience just to get exposed to that at such a young age.
And so hit you with a tough one. What's your thoughts then on all these recent roughing the passer calls?
Oh, gosh. I mean,
you can say pass if you want, but
no, not a pass at all. It's difficult because the quarterbacks are unquestionably the most important player on the field. And if it's your guy, you want them protected. But anybody that loves the physicality of football sees that. And, you know, like the one that made so many headlines with Tom a month ago or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Even he probably watches that and like this, the game should not be officiated this way. And I can remember from my career, I had a few like ball gone, step and a half, pop him right in the shoulder pads or even in the helmet, Brett Favre hits. And he was as excited as I was about this.
Yeah.
He'd get up and slap me on the butt and be like, "Great hit." And then we'd go do it again. And so I understand we need to make the game sustainable so that the most important players can stay on the field. And there's a pendulum, you know, there's trial and error in the way that the competition committee asks the referees to impose rules. And I have the benefit of, I sat in those competition committee meeting rooms at the combine every year when I was an active player. And they've definitely overshot the mark. My hope is that they'll be able to correct that when they kind of review the way it was enforced this year and maybe find something that makes a little more sense to everybody next year.
Yeah. Hopefully. Cause I think Tom would agree with you that the ridiculous calls, even though he's the one being protected by him, but
yeah.
So you've gone on record and I've heard you say that you're a big Bears fan. You also mentioned here that you grew up in Tennessee. You're back in Tennessee. Is it Bears fan just because you played there?
Yeah. I mean, I played basically my whole career for the Bears. I was sort of a journeyman who never journeyed. You know, we had 8 Pro Bowlers on the defense in those days. And I was one of the 3 guys that never went to a Pro Bowl. So I was never a star, but I was a starter for most of my career and had the benefit to play next to Urlacher, who's a Hall of Famer, and Lance Briggs, who I think should be a Hall of Famer one day.
You just took my final question there. I was going to ask, you think he should be a Hall of Famer?
I do. I mean, I just think guys like Lance and Derek Brooks, which really play the kind of payoff position in that Tampa 2 scheme, everything is set up to have that person be able to make a lot of plays, but they have to make a lot of tough plays. And he, you know, it's almost like Ozzie Smith at shortstop or something in baseball, where it was hard to appreciate how good he was because he made things look easy. Lance was that way at the Will linebacker position. He was such an amazing open field tackler that you could take it for granted. And so I definitely think he should end up in there. You know, I just know there's a lot of politics and sometimes they don't like to put people from the same scheme in the same era in there. So who knows? I hope he gets in there.
Yeah. Sorry. I know I cut you off. You were talking about kind of just being a fan of, the Bears and all that. You played pretty much your whole career there for the most part.
Yeah.
You were saying you were a journeyman.
So I was a journeyman who never had to switch from team to team. But of my 8 years in the league, I was really probably only certain I was going to make the team maybe three of those years. And every other year there was at least some chance that the third round pick that they drafted to replace me was going to end up being better than me and I'd be out of a job. So I mean, I'm a fan in general of the game. If there's a football game on and I have the chance, I'll probably be watching it. But yeah, the Bears organization and they've done so much for me. And even though the McCaskies take a lot of heat for being kind of sleepy team owners in some ways, they do a tremendous amount of stuff that they don't try to get any publicity for to support former players. Now, I'll give one example. They send out an email every year that basically says, if any of you are in a really tough spot and you need financial support, let us know. And I'm thankful that I'm not in that situation, but I'm sure there are some players out there that have hit tough times.
Yeah.
And that some program like that that's not advertised, that, you know, there's probably a lot of shame in a player feeling like that they would need to take advantage of an offer like that. But the fact that that's there and it's not for the press release, it says a lot about who the McCaskies are. And so I've always had a lot of loyalty to them and a lot of respect for how they've run that organization for generations.
It's awesome. They got a big win on Monday night against the Patriots. So that was a exciting game.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. It's funny though, you know, everybody now talks about sports betting and I pay attention to that. It's legal in Tennessee. So every now and then I'll throw $50 on a game just when I think I'm going to watch it. I almost never bet on the Bears because if I'm convinced that they're going to win, then that usually means that they're not. And I did this week. And the reason I did was they had zero people on their injury report. And especially as you get into the second half of the season, it matters as much who the good teams are as it does just who the healthy teams are.
Yeah.
And so I knew coming in that if you have every player firing on all cylinders, even from, you know, kind of a ho-hum team or at least a team that feels like it's still kind of in the rebuilding phase, that can be dangerous as you get later in the season.
Yeah. Well, you were, you made some money. So jumping off the field here, and so I say this jokingly, but you obviously didn't get hit in the head too much as you you got your MBA from Northwestern, and you know, and you early on founded a company called Overdog. So tell us about founding that company and making that transition post NFL career.
Yeah, so I'll start even a little earlier than that. When I was in about my third or fourth offseason and I had signed a second contract and knew I was going to be in Chicago for a while, I was always a guy who kind of maybe just out of paranoia, like I didn't think I was going to play that long. And so I was always trying to develop plans for what might come next. And so in that, I think it was my fourth offseason, I started business school at Northwestern. And I would do winter and spring quarters, and then I would skip summer and fall and start up again the next year. And I had used in the NFL, you know, they'll pay for most of it, which is an amazing program that they have. And that positioned me well. I was done, and then I ended up playing my last football game about a year later. And while I was at business school, I got really excited about the world of entrepreneurship. I didn't know if I was going to be a VC or if I was going to be a founder and work at a startup. And it's ended up being the case that I've done both of those in my 12-ish years since I retired. Overdog, which we sold, but not for a great outcome. Like I didn't make a lot of money. None of my investors made a lot of money. But we took a startup from start to finish over the course of 3 years and sold it. And I would describe it as kind of a nice save. It was kind of the best outcome given the hand that we were dealt. But even, you know, by all descriptions, I would still consider that a failure from a financial return perspective. You just learn so much.
Yeah.
And you learn about how to evaluate companies as an investor. You learn about hiring and go to market and how to hire talent, especially technical talent, like there's just so many things if you want to be in the world of startups where the trial and error of being in the trenches of a startup and having five jobs that you have to do every day is such an amazing learning experience. And so even though that was pretty early in my career, that was basically the first thing I did post-football. Even though it wasn't financially lucrative, it was really sort of some of my most valuable learning in terms of the things that it positioned me to do after that.
Yeah, which after that was you becoming a partner at NextPlay Capital. And before my question, congrats. As we reported in the brief last week, you just closed in an oversubscribed third round for your fund or your third fund. And so congrats on that. And tell us about NextPlay and what you're up to there.
Yeah, so we've got a great team at NextPlay. That's the first thing I'd mention. Our founder, many of your readers and listeners may know, Ryan Neese. Ryan played most of his career for the Bucks, finished his career with the winless Lions, with which I always pick his chops about. Ryan is Ronnie Lott's son. So he kind of grew up in a football royalty family in the Bay Area. And when Ronnie left the game, this was the mid-90s, he and Joe Montana and Harris Barton, who was one of the offensive linemen on those 49er Super Bowl teams, they started a fund of funds called HRJ Capital. Their venture fund of funds product was called Champion Ventures. And what a fund of funds means is that in addition to investing directly into startups, you also invest into other venture capital funds. And venture is this weird world because some of the best funds are so much better than everyone else that you're almost pitching them and trying to justify why they should take your money instead of their many other options to raise their fund when they go to market to get assets to invest into startups. And so Harris and Joe and Ronnie realized that if they could pool together their community from the sports world, team owners, athletes, that could be a very helpful way to get into the best venture capital funds. And so they did that very well. They were LPs, which means investors in a lot of the top funds of that day, like Sequoia and Benchmark and Matrix and Kleiner Perkins. And some of those are still the best firms today. They sold that company in 2008. Ryan basically breathed life back into a lot of those venture capital relationships that Ronnie and Joe and Harris had when he started NextPlay in 2014. So we similarly invest both into startups and into other venture capital funds. We do that on behalf of an LP base that again includes lots of athletes and team owners and musicians and actors and you name it. But we also now have a lot of institutional investors, things like registered investment advisors and pension funds and endowments. And that actually ends up being, as you get bigger and your fund sizes go from 25 to 100 to $200 million, you're not going to be able to raise a multi-hundred million dollar fund 250K at a time. So you need bigger capital allocators, which forces you to kind of build relationships in the institutional investing world. And so NextPlay, which has been around for 8 years and change now, we've grown up and which is close to crossing $500 million in assets under management. Most of that credit goes to Ryan and Eric and some of his very early partners who've been there since the beginning. I joined about 3 years ago as our fourth partner. But yeah, it's been a fantastic experience because I get to be a VC and do all the things that I'm love and I'm passionate about there. But at the same time, we still get to work with athletes and do a lot of education and networking opportunities and other things like that, that even kind of hearkening back to those days as an NFLPA player rep still allow you to scratch that itch in ways that you can kind of serve your teammates and serve the locker room.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get some of these playing field insiders involved. We'll make sure and include links for guys to check out. But outside of NextPlay, I know you've been regularly involved in the community and Special Olympics, Boys and Girls Club of America. Tell us about the community and why, like, why that's so important to you and why those charities.
The thing that I was actually most involved in late in my Chicago career was I was on the board of the Brain Injury Association of Illinois. And that is an organization that provides support and resources to the families of the victims of brain injury, which includes concussions in sports, but it also includes motorcycle accidents or whatever else might happen, car wrecks that could cause people to get a traumatic brain injury. And the reason I did that is that I was kind of early in the paradigm shift. Like I played from 2003 to 2011, which was really sort of the early start of the change in the attitude around concussions. And when I had a concussion in my first or second year, like 2004, I think I had one. I played the rest of the game and we watched the film the next day and I just had no recollection. And I played the
Crazy.
next week and had a
Yeah.
headache and there wasn't even any conversation that I might not play, even though you could be in a pretty foggy space in those days and it just wouldn't get noticed. And when I was retiring in 2011, concussions were very much as top of mind as they are today. The lawsuits were forming, the notion that if you got a concussion, you needed to take time off and rest for your brain to heal, just like any other body part would. I kind of played through that paradigm shift, and I'm still today on the board of the Player Safety and Welfare Committee for the NFL and the NFLPA. And so, I've been back in Nashville for 5 years, and I've actually like. I haven't yet jumped headfirst into any board roles for charity work. And part of that is that I think, and I don't know if this will resonate with any of your listeners, but everybody has a bias to just say yes when people ask you to do things for a nonprofit cause. But we all also have very finite hours in the day. And if you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And maybe a little bit kind of in an effort to get it perfect. Like, I want to work with the nonprofits where I feel like I can absolutely maximize my impact.
Yeah.
And like, I'm the perfect person to be on that board and to help them raise money and to drive their mission. And I've been a little deliberate in figuring out what I want to do in Nashville relative to some of the things that worked and frankly didn't work and some of the nonprofits that I supported in Chicago. And so that's something that's hugely important to me. But also like just because we're fairly recently since we've been back in Nashville, something that I'm also sort of in, I've got a couple things that if we did another podcast in a year, I'd hope I'd have some big news to announce.
All right, there you go. We'll have to do it again. But talking about podcasts, you have your own podcast of your own at Next Play Capital. Can I get some advice? Like, what would you give? What advice would you give to me? Or you, I mean, are you enjoying it? Do you like, having these conversations?
You're doing a better job than we are, so kudos to you. I mean, I'm sure this resonates with you, but I do about half of our podcast interviews. Ryan does the other half. And my favorite part, or maybe two parts, is one, I learn a ton. I mean, our podcast guests are generally general partners at the funds we're invested in. Athletes from our community or founders of these amazing companies that we are either directly invested in or indirectly invested in through our funds. And so I just learned so much from every conversation. And the other part is that there's just something about the podcast format, and I know we're already buddies, but even if we weren't, I end up establishing like a lasting relationship with at least half of the people I interview for our podcast. And even just as a way to get to know people and talk about something more meaningful than the weather, I've loved that. Just it's like an icebreaker to having a real conversation with somebody that you end up sticking around with.
Yeah, for sure. That is that's true. I feel in the same way. I made some great relationships just through these conversations, and just kind of shows we need more conversations in this world. People just talk and be in a better spot. But Hunter, thank you so much for your time today. But more importantly, thank you for all your just advice over the years, the business deals you've shown me, and just all that. So looking forward to following along and many more years of success ahead of you.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me on.